Becker versus Becker.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I'm Bradley Sipp, and together with my co-counsel, David Kiker, represent the appellant, Mark Becker.
Mike, before you start, have you entered an appearance?
I have, Judge. I filed it. I have represented Mr. Becker through the entirety of his trial.
Okay.
In going through the appellate record, I noted that I wasn't included on it, so I e-filed that and accepted.
Perfect. Thank you.
Counsel, Judge, it's our contention that the district court abused its discretion by wholly disregarding the report of the court-ordered referee in this case and failed to determine whether the referee's findings were clearly against the weight of the evidence. Just a very short summary of this case. It's a dissolution of marriage case that the parties agreed would be referred to a court-appointed referee. Over 16 days of trial, the referee took evidence, made his written findings of fact, and his conclusions of law. After he did so, the parties had an opportunity to file exceptions to those. They did. Eventually, the appellant withdrew his exceptions, and the district court then created and drafted a decree. However, in creating and drafting that decree, the district court wholly disregarded all of the findings of the referee and started from scratch, if you will, based on the written record.
Counsel, so the argument, one argument of opposing counsel is that your client withdrew his exceptions to the referee's report. And so that somehow then you have waived any arguments that you have with regard to the decree. Can you respond to that, please?
Well, Judge, we have no objection to the referee's report being accepted. Okay. And the problem, I suppose, in this case is that because the judge doesn't make any findings whatsoever that any of the findings of the referee were clearly against the weight of the evidence.
But the district court did adopt some of the referee's findings, resolutions of the issues, correct?
It's certainly not clear. He does make some mention to what the referee did.
Mm-hmm.
However,
well, in some of the areas, the findings were the same, whether he referred to the district to the referee's report or not, right?
That is true.
And then in other areas, he modified what the referee did without finding anything about it being against the weight of the evidence, which I understand is part of your argument. My question to you is, though, in your assigned errors, do you also assign error to those things that the district court did not change from the referee's report?
No, Judge.
So you simply are arguing things that the district court modified.
That's correct. And in fact, the district court, I mean, we can see that the district court went beyond modifying. For instance, the minor child, Susanna, of the parties. The referee had ordered a 10-4 visitation schedule with the appellant having 4 days and the appellee having 10. The appellee filed an exception to that and asked that her parenting plan be put into place. I believe that would have been a 10-2 plan. But the district court instead gave the parties joint custody. Really did what nobody asked for, didn't do what the referee did, went far beyond anything that any exception was filed for. And while it's in my client's benefit to have more time with his daughter, it's simply an example of what the district court did in disregarding what had happened. Additionally, if we look at how the marital property and the marital estate was divided, the parties had both had an opportunity to provide to the referee the properties they wanted. They owned substantial real property, and I believe it was exhibit number 159 was the appellee's request to the court-appointed referee of the properties that she would receive. The referee, in determining who would have which properties, gave the appellant one of the properties that the appellee would have wanted. The district court, however, gave her more real property than she ever even asked for. He based on solely the written record, having never met the parties, having never had an opportunity to weigh their credibility, he nonetheless, on the second page of the decree, finds that my client's testimony is not credible. Nowhere in his findings of fact or conclusions of law did the referee find that.
Is there any difference between a special master and a referee?
Judge, I don't believe that there is. I believe that as we look at specifically the case law, I believe it's Larkin v. Ethicon, the court there found that the finding of a special master were given the effect of a special verdict. And like the verdict of a jury, will not be set aside unless clearly against the weight of the evidence. We know that as a jury, as a finder of fact, it's very hard to overturn what they find. This is, of course, an equity case, not a law case. But nonetheless, it's a high bar. We did provide the court, while it's not controlling on this court at all, the Calmet's case from Florida. Very similar to this case, it was a case where we had a referee and a district court judge, although in Florida they use different terms. And there the Florida court said, you know, this referee is the one who presided over all of the evidence, was the finder of fact. He's the one who should be making the decision. Their standard was, but for good cause shown, those findings should stand. Here, the district court judge made no findings whatsoever. He simply drafted a decree that stated out what he believed was the case. Like I say, at the time that he drafted that decree, he'd never met the parties. He'd never heard even a word of testimony from them, and obviously drew inferences from the written word that the referee had not.
So do I understand, at least from the Florida case, which I agree we don't is not controlling here, but in terms of what you're seeking, assuming we agree with you, that the district court could have only changed the findings if they were clearly against the weight of the evidence. What do we do? In the Florida case, the appellate court then went ahead and looked at all of the assigned errors and the things that the district court, the equivalent of the district court in that case, modified and looked at it as in terms of whether those were against the weight of the evidence. Is that what you're asking this court to do?
Well, it's a big record, Your Honor.
I know. I'm aware of that.
And either or. I believe this court could either do as the Florida court did and simply look at the report of the referee and determine if his findings and facts and finding of fact and conclusion of law was clearly against the weight of the evidence or not, or this court could remand it back to the district court for the district court to make those findings on the referee's report.
Of course, we have a situation where that district judge has retired now, which is a little complicating.
And that's it's interesting that you say that, Judge. But it is assigned to another district judge. I believe that judge has the ability to look at the report and determine based on the record if, in fact, it's against the greater weight of the evidence. You know, as we look at what the referee did and what the district judge did, many of those things were based purely on discretion. You know, as we look at a case like this, an equity case, if you gave it to seven different judges in Lancaster County, you may get seven different ways to skin a cat, so to speak. And here, we don't believe that anything the referee did was clearly against the weight of the evidence. And in fact, the difference here is discretion one way or the other. But I don't know why parties would ever agree to partake in any form of alternative dispute resolution like this if when they get their day in court, and in this case they're 16 days in court with a referee, with a court reporter, for their testimony, for them being there, to be wholly disregarded. You know, this court states many times that the finder of fact in viewing the litigants, in hearing the testimony, can best weigh what's actually happening, what the true facts are. And in this case, that was the referee, John Ballou. Up to the point that he made his decision, Judge Burns had never met these.
So your position would be the referee submits findings and conclusions to the recommendations to the district court judge. The judge should adopt it unless there's anything clearly against the weight of the evidence. If it's appealed from there to us, it would be an abuse of discretion of the district court judge reviewing.
for clearly against the weight of the evidence?
Well, I think it would be. But here, we never get that far. And so we withdraw our exceptions to the referee's report, but it's not clear what the judge adopted and what he didn't. Because while there was a long list of exceptions, he never went through piece by piece by piece, mm-hmm. and instead recreated what he felt it should be, without ever having heard even one word of live testimony.
Counsel, before you run out of time, I'd like to change gears here and talk about the acceptance of benefits issue that was raised in a motion to dismiss. And my question pertains to the three commercial properties that were awarded to the wife in this case. Do I understand that, according to the affidavit, that quitclaim deeds had been executed by your client to the wife on these properties?
That's correct, Judge. He could not post a supersedious bond, and so in following the order of the court, he did do that. Now, I'm out of time, but if I may...
If you would respond, please.
So, yes, he did follow the order of the court because he did not file a supersedious bond, so he was forced to. So it's our contention that acceptance of benefits doesn't apply there because he's simply following the court order. But secondly, this motion was filed to dismiss. It was overruled.
Well, to be addressed.
To be addressed, but it was never reasserted in the brief of the appellee. For that reason, we feel it's moot at this point.
Thank you.
How long did we take the appellant over? Mr. Rasmussen, you may have those additional 50 seconds if you would like.
Your Honor, may it please the court. My name is Sally Rasmussen. I represent the plaintiff appellee, Sonia Becker. I want to respond to the argument about the referee, but before I do that, I'd like to address the issue on the motion to dismiss. Mm-hmm. Sonia Becker moved the court to dismiss Mark Becker's appeal for the reason that he had accepted the benefits of the decree. And if sustained by the court, then the only issues before this court on appeal will be those pertaining to the minor children. Sonia Becker filed her motion to dismiss. She supported it with her affidavit and a supporting brief. Our Supreme Court has stated that that is the proper means of bringing that type of motion before the appellate court. Mark Becker filed an objection to the motion to dismiss and asked for an additional 14 days to file a responsive brief. Sonia Becker responded and indicated she had no objection to the court awarding the additional 14 days for briefing. Then the court entered the order as follows. Motion of appellee for summary dismissal overruled. The issue regarding the acceptance of the benefits will be considered following the completion of appellate briefing and final submission of the appeal to the court, the case to proceed. Counsel for Sonia Becker understood that order to mean that the motion to dismiss would not be determined as a preliminary matter, but would be taken up by the court following the completion of all of the briefing. Therefore, she submitted her brief and then also her brief on cross appeal, subject to the court's consideration of and ruling on the motion to dismiss. In his reply brief, Mr. Becker indicated that he understood the earlier court's ruling to be an overruling of the motion unless it was again regurgitated in the briefs filed by Sonia Becker because she had not done that because she'd already briefed it. He was not going to address it. But that response sort of overlooks the fact that it had been properly briefed and submitted to the court already. My understanding was the court was just not going to address it at that time. When the court in the past has issued orders instructing the parties to submit further briefing, the court is very clear in those orders that they are looking to the parties for additional briefing. You know, I've noted one in the In Re Interest of LT that just was decided this year where the court said, we want further briefing and here's what you are to address. And that was not included in this order. But the order is simply too important for the court not to hear both parties, or worse, just to dismiss or overrule because there was a misunderstanding about the order. To be certain that the motion is still alive, I filed a I renewed the motion this morning, filed it with the court along with a supplemental affidavit, including some additional facts that regarding circumstances that have occurred since the initial affidavit. And in the Geis case, the Supreme Court entertained a second or a renewed motion to dismiss, just like we did in this case. And even though it had overruled the first motion to dismiss for acceptance of the benefits, sustained a second motion upon receiving the renewed motion and the additional evidence. So it appears to be proper, but just to make no mistake that we still consider that motion live, it was filed again, and I have no objection to the court. Again, in all fairness to Mr. Becker, giving him an additional 14 days to get his brief on file in response to that motion. That would be the typical procedure. He would have 14 days to respond to my motion and brief, but for the order that came out from the court, and I think that's probably where the confusion is.
Were those three commercial properties that Judge Moore referred to that the quick claim deeds had been executed, were those were treated the same way by the referee as the district court judge?
I believe Mr. Becker received all of the commercial properties and
okay,
the
so
businesses.
That changed from
it
the
did.
Referee to, okay, thank
it
you.
It did,
that's
yes,
all,
Your
that's
Honor.
All I wanted.
In terms of the substance of the argument on the acceptance of the benefit doctrine, Mark Becker essentially asked the court to award him all of the commercial properties and businesses that he received and the residential properties that he received, and in addition to award him all of the commercial properties that Sonia Becker received. After, because he failed to file the supersedious bond, after she's taken full control of those businesses, has operated them, expended her time and money in those businesses, he now is asking the court to award those to him. That would be extremely prejudicial to Sonia Becker for that to occur. If he wanted to maintain the status quo, he should have filed a supersedious bond and sought a receivership so that those kinds of circumstances wouldn't change, but he did not do that. And so, as the affidavit today indicates, she's already sold one of the businesses in an arm's length transaction, and they have now separated all the debt. They all have their own refinancing through their own banks, and they are separately operating the businesses.
Now, your motion, though, went beyond just those three properties in terms of the acceptance of the benefit.
Yes.
So let's talk about the properties that were awarded to the husband that you don't cross appeal on. Under the Liming line of cases, is that really an acceptance of the benefits that would change through the appeal?
The Liming court is the court that established or maybe more clearly defined the exceptions mm-hmm. to the acceptance of the benefit document and that or doctrine, and that's where the court found one exception was if one spouse conceded the other spouse should have certain property. Or the other was whether or not they were entitled as a matter of right to certain property, and the last one was whether there was a severable order that wouldn't be reviewable on appeal. But as to the first exception under Liming, party's concession as to whether or not Mrs. Becker, whether she concedes Mr. Becker should have certain property. But that goes to the issue of whether it's contested, and on page 6 of Mr. Becker's brief, he says all of it's at issue. They were all contested at the time of trial, and the parties were unable to agree. And in addition, she does not concede that he's entitled to any of the properties that she received. She is asking the court to maintain the court's decree in that regard.
But at the current time, there's no argument on the award of properties to Mr. Becker.
There is. In her cross appeal, she has challenged the
life
court's
insurance.
Yeah, not just the life insurance policy, Your Honor, but also she claims she has a non-marital interest in some of the properties that were awarded to him because the tracing included tracing of particular amounts, just like with the Westo Development Building and the payment of the down payment on the payoff of the loan on the home. There were two other properties where her gifted monies were used exactly the same way, and she's claiming a non-marital interest in properties that were awarded to Mr. Becker.
Switching gears, what authority does the court have to make credibility findings?
The one credibility finding that has been objected to by counsel, as I understand it today, is where Judge Burns found that Mr. Becker's credibility was so lacking in connection with the business matters that nothing he said would be considered by the court as truthful. That did not require a credibility determination. That only required a reading of the Bill of Exceptions. I was in the same position Judge Burns was. I came into the case after the trial was done. My information came solely from the Bill of Exceptions and all of the exhibits and everything that came in. What was apparent was over the 14-day trial, it was before the referee, it was a very chaotic, disjointed type of proceeding. And it was, in the Bill of Exceptions, it gives you a lot more flow, if you will. I think the parties took the witness stand countless times about different matters on different days. Sometimes they revisited issues and sometimes they didn't. But a reading beginning to end of the Bill of Exceptions gives a much better picture, and it doesn't take long to determine that the evidence does not support Mr. Becker's testimony. And that is what the judge was referring to. That's a factual statement. Sure, it's about his credibility, but it's extremely warranted. There's no way to come to another conclusion based on the Bill of Exceptions.
Is there a difference between a special master and a referee?
I believe the decisional law shows that the court uses them interchangeably.
So that being the case, and with there being precedent out there then that their findings are to be looked at as though it was a jury verdict?
Well, you can pick language from different cases, but in this case, the parties stipulated from the very beginning. Here's the stipulation. Each party understands that the referee will prepare findings of fact and conclusions of law, and that his findings of fact and conclusions of law are subject to review by the Honorable Stephen D. Burns.
Subject to review under
yes.
What standard of review?
It also says each party does hereby consent to the referee acting as referee pursuant to the provisions of 251129. And to the Honorable Stephen D. Burns reviewing the findings of fact and conclusions of law and making any appropriate determination thereon. And then at the hearing where the Bill of Exceptions from the referee was offered into evidence, Judge Burns asked the attorneys, do you have any objections to me reviewing the Bill of Exceptions and making my decisions? And the response was, no, Your Honor. I believe the documents and the stipulation and the party's understanding was at all times that the court would review it and enter his own orders. But he did follow the law. His standard of review is appropriate even if the court finds that he made changes. Implicit in those changes are that the referee's findings in those respects are against the weight of the evidence, and therefore he is going to modify those portions. He didn't modify nearly all of it, but he adopted some and he modified some. And when he did that, he fully explained what he was doing. He was pretty thorough in making his findings, and they are supported by the evidence. Thank you.
I do have one question on your cross-appeal.
Yes.
You talk about the Christmas being split and how that affects your client's ability to go to Spain for family Christmases and so forth, and certainly can appreciate, you know, the difficulty that that creates. But how do we do anything about that with our standard of review?
I think, again, it's an abuse of discretion where both parties were seeking an extended period of time, and the court made the finding that the only reason he was going to do that is because he wanted to eliminate a certain number of exchanges, but his order doesn't accomplish that. So, I just think it doesn't make sense.
You don't want to argue that the district court improperly modified the referee's order, I take it. Against the clear weight of the evidence. I'm sorry, that was unfair. I withdraw that question.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. Counsel is excused. Thank you. Our final case of the day is State v. Stevenson. State v. Stevenson.